This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
Is racism a matter of white privilege? Are whites the only people who are racist? Or is racism more, well, akin to maybe tribalism? A certain kind of tribalism. Does it have anything to do with color? Not necessarily. Does it have anything to do with the way your hair looks, the way your physiognomy, your face looks? Does it have anything to do with your special economic privilege? Well, maybe, maybe not. But maybe it doesn't have anything to do with white privilege. If we were to take a look at what's happened in the last election, we would find that racism, that spirit of racism, hovered over much of the communications. In fact, it had over everything to do with the whole idea of unfettered immigration. People coming in without legality. Why? Because there was a large group of the country that said, well, you know what? Those people are being discriminated. They don't have white skin. Therefore, they should be entitled to come into this nation that is pandering exclusively to white people, and therefore we need to have more other colored folk come into the country, whether or not it's legal or not. And so much of what happened in the election was encompassed by this whole idea of racism. And it poisoned the conversation. Racism is like a poison. I wrote about it in my book, Renewing the Soul of America, that was endorsed by 38 national Christian leaders. It's a poison in our country. We just cannot allow that to take place. But interestingly, it's being driven primarily by those who purport to come against it. They're the ones that stir in the pot to create racism. It's just another ism, another belief system. And so today on Viewpoint, we have a rather humorous guy who is joining us here to kind of set the record straight, shall we say, concerning this issue of racism. And we ask the question, is racism driven by white privilege? Is it only white guys? Well, our special guest today is A.J. Rice. I don't believe that he has joined us here on the program before, but he's a publicist here in the country. He has a very clean, neat haircut. But I'll tell you, if you listen and read his book, you're going to get a racial haircut as well, because it's going to set the record straight. It's going to help us to understand through amazing humor where things really are and where they come from. So, AJ, it's good to have you on the program.
Great to be here. Actually, you know, Chuck, I was here 2 years ago for my first book, Volume 1 in this series, The Woking Dead.
Oh!
The White Privilege album, the new book, is actually Volume 2. It's the sequel to the one you interviewed me for 2 years ago.
Wow, so what a memory you have.
Taking it to the mat, brother. We're taking it to the mat.
Absolutely. So Volume 2, well, I'll tell you, Volume 2 can stand on its own, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, I don't often have the privilege of interviewing somebody that has the kind of humor. I don't know whether you call it dry humor or what kind of acerbic humor or whatever kind of humor you call it. But I don't often have the opportunity to interview somebody with this kind of humor, because what we talk about on this program is dead bang serious. However, the way you have dealt with this subject actually helps us to pierce through an awful lot of the crazy thinking that seems to hover over this discussion. Why are you writing about this, though? I mean, here you are. You're a publicist. You're involved with a whole lot of people that seem to know better. But why would you be writing about this subject?
Well, look, you know, I was raised on Rush Limbaugh, and one of the things he used to say is his job was to use irreverent humor to illustrate truth, or to use absurdity to illustrate truth. And I'm a millennial. I'm a sort of geriatric millennial, but millennial.
Now, how old is a geriatric millennial?
Well, you have to So as old as you could be, born in the 80s, basically.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, the millennials are turning 40 now. So, you know, we're applying for our AARP card. You know,
the question, though, AJ, is whether you're old enough to even comprehend the nature of racism, because you've been inculcated with a whole spirit concerning and a propaganda view of racism.
Sure.
That perhaps has driven it so deeply into the membranes of your mind you can't even think straight.
No, I can think straight. So, look, I'm from Philadelphia, so I haven't been inculcated with anything.
Well, I appreciate that confession, by the way.
Philadelphia, and your audience is going to hear the accent for an hour, so buckle up. So, Philadelphia playgrounds, Philadelphia sports teams. You know, in the 80s, I wanted to be three black people for Halloween. I wanted to be Dr. J, I wanted to be Charles Barkley, and I wanted to be Darth Vader. That's what I wanted to be in the 80s. So, part of the problem with conservatives, and, you know, libertarians too, they get afraid. And Trump has sort of done an intellectual jailbreak on some of this. There are certain topics that, you know, people of Western European descent don't want to get into.
Mm-hmm.
I have no problem getting into it. And that's, you know, I wasn't, you know, pulled out of the wrapper and prepped in some kind of fancy manner, right? So, I came from, you know, a blue-collar background. My parents put themselves through college. My dad worked as a coal miner to put himself through law school.
Well, wait a minute. Was he a black man then?
Well, only
if
when
he worked in the coal mine?
Only when he had soot on his face. Although he did like Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, so maybe. I don't know. But I think they get afraid. They don't want to be called names. I don't really care about that. One of the reasons Publius PR has been as successful as it is, especially in the era of the OG from the Golden Escalator here, the Trump era, is that a lot of, you know, sort of establishment Washington all came from the same incubators. They're all super uptight, you know, and they kind of look down their nose at state school kids, which I am one, and, you know, I've been able to make them eat their lunch, and not just with the company, but, you know, I that sort of style transfers over into the way I write. I write mm-hmm. the way I talk.
Oh, okay. Now we're starting to get the reality of it.
Yeah, well, look, if there's plenty of people, if they want to grow up and be George Will and they want to grow up and be Victor Davis Hanson, have at it. Have at it. But if you're trying to reach a certain audience,
mm-hmm.
and understand this, Trump knew this the final days of this campaign. He didn't go to the New York Times editorial page. He didn't go to the Chamber of Commerce. He went and sat down with the bros on all these different podcasts where he could discover actual undecided voters. Because you're not going to find them at the Washington Post. You're not going to find them at the Wall Street Journal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're going to find them there. And that's who I am writing for. Now, yes, conservatives, libertarians, Christians, they can read my books. They get it. You know, I don't think we're as bashful as we once were. But, you know, I'm trying to use humor to bring new voices to the movement.
All right. Well, that's exactly what we are bringing you on to talk about here. Right. So, friends, stay tuned. AJ Rice with us. Oh, racism setting the record straight. What record is that? We'll be right back.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Welcome back to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. Our guest today says this right in the beginning of his book called The White Privilege Album. He says, the once accepted universal lie of white privilege and white supremacy must be weighed against the Christian truth of the sovereignty and universal power of Jesus Christ. 85% of the black community proclaims Christianity as their one and only religion. Christians are proclaimed children of God and heirs of Jesus Christ. As his heirs, his power is transferred to his children. Therefore, as an heir of Jesus Christ and a child of the Most High God, how can I be oppressed? How can any white man have privilege over me? How can I be a victim? He's writing, actually, for the viewpoint of a black man or woman. So to be a victim, to believe in white supremacy, one has to reject the sovereignty of Jesus Christ. That's pretty strange.
Yeah, and that, you know, that's from the foreword, which was written by Vince Everett Ellis, who actually is an African-American, you know, once upon a time preacher himself.
Yeah, he's been on this program as well.
Yeah, right, and he's a powerful evangelical African-American voice. And look, he's the one that taught me that, you know, this term multiculturalism is used as if it's a, you know, some sort of value added to the United States. But he's the one that reminds me, and I, you know, I credit him. We're not really a multicultural country. We're a multi-ethnic country.
There you go.
We have one culture here. It's Judeo-Christian, Greco-Roman culture.
Right.
And then to take the next step and to quote Pat Buchanan, not all cultures are created equal. Not all civilizations are created equal. That's why some of them go away. That's why some of them fail. And we have had here one of the most successful in Earth history. So when you hear the term white privilege or patriarchy or, you know, toxic masculinity, and you're hearing it from the left, mainly woke people, so wokeism, but also on the international stage through globalism, which I sort of, wokeism and globalism are kind of the sort of, the Gemini of evil.
Right. They kind of go hand in hand.
They both got rejected here in this election. When you hear them use this term, though, Chuck, they're talking about really three things that they want to get rid of, and that is Western civilization, the middle class, and the nuclear family. They don't like any of these three things for various reasons, because they are the things that sort of hold up the stability of all of this, especially if you're talking about, at least now, because Greece and Rome are not around, the Judeo-Christian Western culture from Moscow to San Diego. They don't like it, and they want to replace it with something in their bleak image. And they try to, at the margin sometimes, but sometimes it's at the heart of our culture. And it gets into corporate America and sports, and in some cases, you know, you've got woke Jesus. They bring Karl Marx into the church,
right.
They baptize him right in front of you. You know, so the churches aren't even safe. So, look, I try to use humor to illustrate some of this stuff because people need to understand where this comes from, why it's here, and how you can sort of push back on it.
Well, and you've done a masterful job of this. And for a serious-minded guy like me, a former trial lawyer, you know, I'm interested in truth and also have written quite a number of books myself focused on restoring truth in our society, even in the church. But humor is a good thing if it's clean, if it's not derogatory to people, but derogatory to thinking that is distorted and perverted. And that's what you do in your book. And I want to make it available. Friends, this is a hardbound book, and it's a $29 book, but it's yours for $20 on our website, saveus.org. Saveus.org. Just give us a call at 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA. Or write to us at Save America Ministries. P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check and $6 for postage and handling. We'll get the book in your hands. And you will laugh, but you will also maybe cry. You will have your mind and your heart you're going to have an opening, a serious opening, to be able to see through the smoke screen of white privilege and racism as it is discussed often by the political left in this country. So all that having been said, we have just a month ago gone through a day called Columbus Day. And, you know, when I grew up, we used to say, in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. And that's what we knew about him. He sailed to the Pinta, the Nina, and the Santa Maria. And he didn't actually land on American shores, but he did land here in the West Western world. And so we have Washington, D.C., called the District of Columbia. We have a song that was Columbia, the Gem of the Oceans. We have Columbia University. We have Columbia everywhere across this country. And now we beheaded Columbus. What's up with that?
Yeah, well, and you know, a lot of people don't realize this, but one of the reasons Columbus Day was given a jolt, at least in the 20th century, is that contrary to what the humanities department at some of these Ivy League schools would tell you, the biggest mass lynching in American history was of Italians in Louisiana.
Mm.
And the Italian immigrants were so upset by it that the, you know, the federal government got involved, and Columbus Day became what at least we knew it up until the last sort of decade or so, when mm-hmm. the sort of political correct Woking Dead came along and tried to gobble it up under the auspices that he brought genocide to the Western Hemisphere. He actually brought a rebirth. He actually brought medicine. He actually brought literacy. And that's the thing.
Well, he actually also brought the Christian faith. If you read his diary, it is very expressly focused on the primary reason for his coming was to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ.
100%. He was Italian. He was working on behalf of the Catholic Kingdom of Spain. They were very interested in that also. And away we went. I mean, you know, and now we change the names of sports teams, the Cleveland Guardians and the Washington Commanders. I don't know what these two teams are. Mm-hmm. only sort of Indians, quote unquote, that seem to be upset, you know, in addition to, you know, wearing headdresses like Elizabeth Warren does on Columbus Day, you know, it seemed to be sort of white people in the faculty lounges of America. There's a run-of-the-mill indigenous people out there do not seem to care that their mascot, whether it's the Kansas City Chiefs or the Atlanta Braves or the Chicago Blackhawks hockey team. Look, I'm Irish Catholic, you know. I'm not real excited about the Notre Dame Fighting Irish or the Boston Celtics or the Lucky Charms guy, right? That offends me, Chuck. How dare you? Now, come on. Don't we have better things to do? Don't we have better things to do? But over the last couple years, because of wokeism, go to the grocery store. I always find this fascinating. Go to the grocery store, and I write about this in the book. Not only have they removed the Land O'Lakes Indian from the butter, but Aunt Jemima, Mrs. Buttersworth, and Uncle Ben have been removed from the grocery store. And it's so right. interesting because, again, if you really examine it, these are white liberals removing people of color
right.
from our modern lives.
Which is the ultimate in racism.
Correct. Correct.
Expunging that which was
every
familiar.
Every black face for breakfast has been removed.
You know, and it really bothered me as a, you know, as a child. I always had a very warm feeling toward Aunt Jemima. I really did. I didn't. To me, it wasn't demeaning at all to black people. In fact, it actually was elevating.
Correct, and you know, I guess it's now they call themselves the Pearl Milling Company or some goofy name. And even her descendants were mad when they did this. They weighed in. The descendants of the chieftain that represented the symbol for the Washington Redskins, they're out there in the media all the time saying, bring our great-great-grandfather back.
Yeah, isn't that fascinating? Well, let's go back to Christopher Columbus, because the people will say on the left that are promoting this perverted form of racism, they will say, well, when those Western Europeans came over, they brought over these diseases that had a terrible effect upon the natives. Well, there is truth to that. Wherever somebody travels, if they have something that other people don't have, they're going to bring over.
Right. It's going on now. It's called the Wuhan Laboratory. It's going on now.
Well, that's absolutely
China
true.
China kept their airports open in December of 19. put a bunch of people on them, and away they went with COVID.
Well, just think what – hey, AJ, just think what the implications will be 50 years from now when the new left will say, you know what, when they brought over those COVID vaccines, look at the extermination that they did that was so much greater than the problem itself. Those people should be put in a gulag somewhere and wiped off the face of the earth. They're worse than Columbus.
That's right. Man, look, I wrote in my first book, The Woking Dead, how globalism spreads disease. And some of it is what you're talking about with smallpox and other things as settlers went west. But it goes on now.
Yeah.
You know, stuff comes out of sub-Saharan Africa. Stuff comes out of, parts of China all the time. You know, the Spanish flu. I mean, I go down a whole list. I mean, that's sort of the story of planet Earth.
It is. So back to Christopher again. He went over there to brought over his people there in the South, the Caribbean, and so on. And as a result, they encountered a group of people that they were natives, but they weren't exactly what you would call pure folk. Were engaged in nefarious behaviors that would put most Westerners to shame. Spanish came into Mexico, oh my goodness, what they encountered there.
Correct. I mean, look, the indigenous people of North and South America were not sitting over here playing patty cake on their best behavior.
Right.
They were all enslaving each other, scalping each other, doing human sacrifice.
Digging out the hearts of the people to sacrifice them by the thousands.
Correct. So stop it with that. And look, the Vikings did similar things, and the Celts, and, you know, the Germanic tribes. I mean, look, humanity.
And how about the Romans? The lined up thousands and thousands along the Via Della Rosa or whatever, the Roman road, and crucified them by the thousands.
That's right.
Okay.
But humanity's not great, and there was only one perfect person, and this audience knows who that one perfect person was. And the rest of us are just trying to live up to that standard.
Okay.
Even the ones that predate him. And the reality is that, you know, in the oldest institution in human history is slavery. You know, this one enslaved that one and this one. And so the idea that, there was some kind of spiritual, you know.
I thought the oldest institution was prostitution.
Well.
Maybe they went hand in hand.
Yeah, well, right.
Okay.
And, you know,
all right. So let's go back. You know, I have a son-in-law who is blacker than the ace of spades. He is so black that when my whitey daughter brought him to our home in Pasadena, California, before we came to Richmond, Virginia, to introduce him to us, it was at midnight. And she knocked on the front door, that we turned the light on, and she kept talking about we. Well, we didn't see any we there. We only saw her. Until he smiled. And when he smiled, we saw that there was something there that was sort of whitish in the mouth. He has become a very, very dear son-in-law. They've been married, almost 30 years now. And the interesting thing is he came from Ghana in Western Africa.
Sure.
His father was a chief there among the tribes in Western Africa. So when we went over there, and I was asked to go over there to speak to the churches, the pastors in Ghana, particularly Accra, the capital, we were taken on a little trip to a place on the coast that was called the Slave Jail. Well, it was not just a jail. It was the slave distribution point. We'll talk more about that when we get back. The slave distribution point in Western Africa? You got to be kidding me. No, I'm not kidding you. That's where slavery began. We'll be right back. This is Viewpoint, and Viewpoint determines destiny.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, saveus.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, saveus.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at saveus.org.
When I was a kid, I loved baseball. In fact, I was a fan of the San Francisco Giants, and particularly of a fellow by the name of Willie Mays. Willie Mays and a bunch of his cohorts up there, let me tell you, Willie McCovey and so on, I was there when he started the game. Oh, but I would never have thought of having them sent off to a gulag somewhere or a jail where they could be sent off quietly to be sent off to some other country to serve them in slavery. No, I revered these people. They were wonderful. They were, in essence, my friends. But it wasn't that way in Ghana, West Africa. No, they had the slave distribution center all built out of stone, cold as cold could be, with a slope that was built to go down into the ocean, where they would send the slaves down this steep slope to slide there into the slave distributor's hands. And who promoted that? Black Africans and their tribes. That's who promoted it. It wasn't the whites that promoted it. It was the blacks that promoted it. So why shouldn't they have to make reconciliation? Why shouldn't they have to supply some sort of repositioning of the funds? Because they started it all. What do you say, AJ?
You know, it's funny. When you debate the left and that, you know, they get into some of the postmodernism they used to sort of justify their points of view, and they have this ability to extrapolate like a French, you know, deconstructionist philosopher. I mean, they're able to get from point A to point B. They're able to tell Anderson Cooper, looking him in the eyes, that Trump is a fascist and that Hitler's everywhere. And I mean, they're able to get to these weird places because of, you know, the humanities department, social sciences, the media helps them, Hollywood helps them. But what's interesting is when you actually just sort of lay out the timeline. And we always talk about, you know, the last slavery, never the first slavery, right? Never like the Pharaoh and Moses. We talk about the one most recent. And if you look around the world right now, you'll find slavery in the Sudan. You'll find it in China. You'll find it alive and well in places that the left doesn't seem to care about, I guess.
Mm.
But when it comes to running America down and running the West down, if you actually want to follow the bouncing ball of slavery, and I write about this a little bit in the book, you know, you are correct that blacks, enslaving blacks was the beginning of African slavery. And they taught the Spanish or they taught the Arabs of North Africa to do it. And the Arabs taught the Spanish and the Portuguese. And the Spanish and the Portuguese taught the French, the English, and the Dutch. And then they all brought it over here, where it was performed in North and South America and the Caribbean.
Right.
But American slavery, when America existed, begins in 1776, not 1619, like D'Angelo, like some of these phonies would try have you believe, and it ends about 91 years later when Lincoln ends it. So look, American slavery is not even 100 years old, but you hear these speeches from the Spike Lees and the Reverend Al Sharpton and the Ibrahim Kendis, all the race grifters, that it was 400 years and 500 years of slavery, and white people invented it. It's a fraud. Just follow the bouncing ball of the timeline. And it's not that hard to deduce. It's all right there, and you don't have to extrapolate or twist yourself into pretzels to see it.
Well, the first slaves did come over in 1619 at Richmond, Virginia. In fact, there's the slave jail there.
English slaves.
However.
Right, not American slaves. There was no America.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true. There were, that's very interesting. So in any event, this is a pervasive problem. It has been throughout all history. And so the only way that you can really point out America as somehow massively dysfunctional because of that is because of our Declaration of Independence that declares all men to be created equal. And so we didn't live up to it with perfection, did we?
Well, but if you look at the Declaration like a user agreement that you know, we all have to sign up for, if we have an iPhone or a Droid or something, we get a new iOS system and we, you know, we've got to click this user agreement in order to update our phone. Jefferson and Franklin and Adams built into that document the ability to update the user agreement. And they didn't have to do that, but they did. And we've been updating the user agreement through the amendment processes and through cultural and political behavior, you know, for 235 years.
Well, even Jefferson, though, who married Sally Henley or whatever her name was.
No, he never married her.
Well, his whatever brother, he had some... Some,
his brother had relations with her. That's where they're getting that nonsense.
All right. Well, whoever it was, but it was Jefferson who wrote, and it's engraved on the Jefferson Memorial, "Indeed I tremble when I consider that God is just and his justice cannot sleep forever." What was he talking about? Slavery?
He's talking about, you know, George Washington freeing the slaves on his deathbed. Now, there were some founding fathers that didn't. There were many founding fathers that didn't own any of them. Adams and Hamilton and Jay and, you know, Franklin. I mean, they're all Northerners. So, you know, the first political dynasty in the United States was in Virginia. And the left knows this. Because in order to cancel America, you got to cancel Virginia first.
That's why the Lord called me to leave Southern California to move to the birthplace of America to declare God's truth back across the country, because as it was told me when we came to Virginia, and particularly Richmond, Virginia, brother, if you can make it work in Richmond, it will work anywhere, because they considered it the premier testing ground for America. And what we've discovered, is the same spirit that you are talking about. And now it's been invaded by high-tech liberals that are driving the problem ever deeper.
Right. No, and that's true. And, you know, Virginia was the first political dynasty before the first five presidents. It also is the Commonwealth where both the Revolutionary War and the Civil War ended.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it has been the sort of junction point. And it's kind of why the Capitol was chosen over dinner to be where it was, where it is currently. And it was to make sure we didn't lose the South in the beginning of the
right.
founding of the nation, for sure, without
yeah.
a doubt.
Okay,
and
so
it continues to be, you know, a place where, you know, some of both the good and the bad things that America can sort of conjure up through social experiments is tested. You know, it's where wokeism had its Waterloo up there in Loudoun County.
You think?
At least the public schools. Right.
Absolutely. So Virginia is still vacillating back and forth. What are we going to believe? And what is this nation going to be? It's still doing that as of this last election. So here, back to your book, you title it sort of facetiously, "The White Privilege Album." Now, you're not really meaning that. It's not about white privilege, but it's a facetious...
Well, it's a, Yeah, it's a take on the Beatles. It's an apology to the Beatles. That's right.
I thought it was a take on the Rolling Stones. I can't get no satisfaction.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know.
All right. I like your subtitle, though, bringing racial harmony to very fine people on both sides.
That's right.
Bringing racial harmony to very fine people on both sides.
That's right. We're
setting the record straight a bit. The book is so humorous, friends. You really kind of owe it yourself to get a little bit of humor into the discussion as he speaks truth to that which currently is imprisoning us into a false racism. It is a $29 book. It's yours for $20 on our website, a hardbound book. And I think you'll really, really value it. It's on our website, saveus.org, saveus.org. You can give us a call at 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA. Write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check at $6 for postage and handling. You know, racism is an equal opportunity employer, isn't it, A.J.?
It is. It is. You know, and I'm, you know, you're talking about Virginia and you're talking about the subtitle of the book. You know, the subtitle of that book, the very fine people part, is me obviously trolling the left and having a little, you know, tongue firmly implanted in cheek there. But the very fine people hoax, which is something Trump said at the tower, at Trump Tower in New York, after the Charlottesville riot.
Right.
Where the left has for a decade now claimed that he said that there were very fine people on both sides, meaning, you know, the white supremacists were very fine people. Now,
right. Which is not at all what he meant.
No, it's not what he meant at all. And that's why I'm using it, because it's been debunked. It's been debunked by Bill Maher, by Michael Rappaport, by CBS News, by Snopes, which is this Soros funded fact check organization. And yet the very fine people hoax made an appearance at both presidential debates from Kamala and from Biden, and it continues to get used by people like Barack Obama as if it were a true thing. When, you know, you had four groups in Charlottesville that day, and some of them that were there from the Virginia Historical Society were trying to get the statue of Robert E. Lee and his horse Traveler moved to the Civil War Museum of Virginia. But the very fine people hoax became the foundational lie for the last decade to make the case that Trump was a racist and that he was Hitler and that he was a Klansman and he was a this and a that.
Mm.
But if you actually look at the tape, he's talking about George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and Ulysses S. Grant. And he's talking about, look, if you come for Lee and you eventually when you run out of Confederate generals to come for, you're going to come for the Union generals. Well, wouldn't you know it? When George Floyd died, that's what they did. And they didn't stop there, Chuck. They went after Winston Churchill and Columbus and the Queen of England.
And it echoes on from there. We'll be right back after this, friends, with A.J. Rice. You've got to get a copy of his book. We'll be right back.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Again, I welcome you back to Viewpoint. Friends, I'm Chuck Chrismeyer. It's Conversation with Ever-Increasing Conviction, talk that transforms, and I hope that today will lead to some sort of transformation, not just because of our conversation here, but because you're going to get a copy of our guest book that is going to help you work through a lot of the confusion in a humorous way, work through a lot of the confusion that has created this racial disharmony that is marketed in the name of democracy in this country. It is just the utter deception using racism as a means to actually market democracy or to claim that those who are trying to actually protect democracy are not democratic because they're actually racist. You can make the accusation, but you have to be able to make it stick. And when you read this book, you're going to find out that the accusation in general does not stick. So here's a question that I have for you, my listening friends. Is there any president of the United States, who does not have a heritage in racism, in American racism, in American slavery? Is there any president of the United States that does not have a heritage traceable to American slavery? Think about that for a moment. Any president. Now, Donald Trump has just been elected the 47th president. So among any of them, is there any president who doesn't have a history of slavery in his heritage?
That's right.
Very interesting question.
Any living president right now.
Yeah.
Of all the living presidents right now, one of them, okay, so president-elect and former presidents, one of them does not have any heritage of owning slaves, and the rest of them all did.
And who might that be, AJ?
That would be...
Shock among shock.
45 and 47.
45 and 47.
That's right. Meaning Jimmy Carter, the Bushes, the Clintons, the Obamas, and Biden, all their descendants of people that owned slavery. Only Trump's ancestors never owned slaves. Now, some of that is because Trump is also in this sort of unique category of having at least one parent born in another country.
Mm-hmm.
And only himself and Obama and Andrew Jackson can claim having one parent not born in the United States or North America. Andrew Jackson and Trump had a mother born in Scotland, Andrew Jackson in Northern Ireland, and Obama's father, obviously, Kenya. But that's it. So Trump has no, slaveholder blood in him, and yet he's Hitler, and yet he's this, and he's that, and
right.
Every other pejorative.
Isn't this right? Fascinating? Utterly fascinating.
Unbelievable.
It just is unbelievable. And then he, just in the last few days, took a little trip up to New York and watched a fight in which a black gentleman won the fight. And after the fight, the black gentleman right there on the mat went into a little dance to mimic, in other words, to celebrate Donald Trump.
That's right.
Unbelievable.
Look, so Trump was always a mainstay in African-American culture through sports and the hip-hop community. But, he got more African-American votes this time around than really any Republican since Reagan and Eisenhower. Which means there is a shift happening. There's a shift happening. And some of that is because, the media has changed and millennials and Gen Z are basically, asking, what exactly are you doing for me? And it may be people's priorities aren't really about skin color. Maybe their priorities are the same across multiple types of ethnicity. Maybe the voter doesn't want the third world redistributed to their neighborhood, or $9 eggs, or energy costs being outrageous, right? Or the police being defunded in certain communities. Maybe that's the same for all Americans that want to give their children and their family a better life. And yet, people like Barack Obama and Joe Biden, Kamala, talk down to these voters and say, look, you got to vote your skin color. You got to vote melanin in your skin. White privilege is everywhere. White supremacy is everywhere.
So in other words, they're actually teaching and promoting racism.
That's right. It's the soft bigotry of low expectations.
Mm-mm-mm. What a shame it is. You know, I have said on this program that because George Gallup years ago said that Black America was the most religious, meaning Christian, group in the country, that would mean that if Black America would live faithfully according to the gospel of Jesus Christ, it would be the greatest hope for America. The problem is, it ain't true. That is, not that Black America isn't the most Christian in terms of going to church and so on, but that it's not living up to the standard of what it means to be a follower of Christ. And so we see that even the things that are being critical of white Americans not living up to the Constitution or not living up to the Declaration of Independence is true in the Black community of not living up to the purity of the gospel. For instance, the abortion rate is triple in the Black community what it is anywhere else in the country. The divorce rate is double in the African-American community what it is elsewhere. The sexual promiscuity rate is far higher in terms of every aspect of sexual promiscuity and its STDs in the Black community. So how is it that people can overlook those serious problems in the Black community and then claim that it's the white problem that they're in the situation they are? It seems to me that we're just lying to ourselves.
And look, there's been a grand manipulation. The Democrat Party is home to, they were the party of the Klan, they were the party of Jim Crow, they were the party of segregation. Margaret Sanger and Woodrow Wilson, you know, were eugenicists. They put Planned Parenthood in Black neighborhoods to keep their numbers down. And it's working even today. And obviously there's been a deterioration in sort of Black family life going back to really Lyndon Johnson's, you know, Great Society programs where, you know, the Black father was replaced by a government check.
Yep. In other words, God was essentially replaced by government.
Correct.
For trust. For trust.
And there's a movement, though, I think. I can feel it. There's some things happening in the African-American community. There's more education happening. There's more spreading out away from these sort of blueberry cities. Because remember, ladies and gentlemen, we don't have red states and blue states. It's all red states with blue cities inside of them. Okay. And they, if you look at a map of space of every county, right? And look, there's, as people get educated, there's like your daughter, you know, people are marrying, you know, they're not just, Italians aren't just marrying Italians and Irish aren't just marrying. People are, you know, having different types of families that look different. And that means there's new thinking. If you can export liberty through your marriage, you can help save America. You can do it.
Exactly.
And I think that's happening. And I think millennials and Gen Z, if we can get our footing economically, which has been tough.
And spiritually.
You know, a lot of this stuff is going to go to bed eventually.
Well, there's going to have to be a radical spiritual revival. And that's not just in white America. It's in Black America. It's in every aspect of America. But I truly believe that a massive spiritual revival in Black America would so impact this country that it would set the stage for something spectacular to happen here that would make a mark in history. Whether that would happen or not, I don't know, because the leaders, many of the leaders in Black America are promoting racism in order to gain their own, keep their own power, perks, and position
that's
in
right.
place. So it's a very sickening thing.
That's what wokeism is about, too.
It is.
You know, it's about customers. So whether it's the trans mafia or Black Lives Matter or the Woking Dead, they need their foot soldiers to implement this behavioral sort of fascism and language fascism.
Bringing racial harmony to very fine people on both sides. Yes, that's why our conversation is what it is here today. It's not about pointing fingers at black or white or brown or any other color. I remember a song back in the 1970s, What Color Is God's Skin? It is black, red, brown, and yellow. It is black, it is white. Every man's the same in the good Lord's sight. That is from a skin color. The problem is not our skin color. It's our sin color. That's our problem. Our problem is not our skin color, friends. It's the sin color. And when we get that right, we'll get the man right. That's how it's going to happen. And yes, our guest today, A.J. Rice, is the humorist par excellence. And the way he writes in his book, and you really need to read it, because it's going to, not only is it going to inform you vastly, beyond anything that you probably know at this point concerning this subject. But it also is going to help thinking through humor to help us kind of settle down and say, wow, you know what? My thinking really has been all off. I didn't know these things. I just haven't understood these kinds of things, and I don't want to be part of this this racist colored system anymore. I don't want to talk about that. I want to be a real person. I want to be a godly person. I want to be God's person. I want to emulate him. That's really what I want to see in this country. What say you, AJ?
Yeah, and that's exactly correct. And if you're looking for an image of hope, even in your professional sports, you mentioned the UFC fighter. I mean, we have gone in a decade from kneeling the national anthem to doing Trump's dance on Saturday and Sunday in football games. African-American athletes went from kneeling to doing the Trump dance. There is hope, right? There is hope.
Well, we want to make sure that Trump isn't our savior, however. So.
No, he's not. He's just a bouncer. If God is the DJ in the club, Trump's the bouncer outside the club.
Now, you're involved with an awful lot of the personages that are involved in the public discussion today. Give us a quick insight in that before the end of the program.
Sure. My day job is I run Publius PR. We put guests on this show, people that have been on prior, and many shows around the country.
Uh-huh.
And some of the cabinet, a good chunk of it, are Publius clients, either current or former. I keep joking that by January 1st, I'm not going to have any clients left.
They're all going to be in the cabinet.
I have to go mow some lawns there. we have been a PR firm that is a PR firm with disruptors. I'm a disruptor. Donald Trump is the great disruptor. If Reagan was the great communicator and Lincoln the great emancipator, Trump is the great disruptor. So he's going to fill his cabinet with disruptors.
Yeah.
Some of them that we have represented include Pete Hegseth, Tulsi Gabbard, Vivek Ramaswamy, Congressman Michael Walt, and RFK Jr. So,
interesting.
And there's others. They're the big ones.
Well, you're quite the guy, AJ, and I appreciate what you've done through your book. It's called The White Privilege Album, Bringing Racial Harmony to Very Fine People on Both Sides. Get your copy, friends, $20 for this $29 book, right on our website, saveus.org. Give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA. Write to us at $6 for postage and handling. Pray for our country. Pray for our president. Let's become honest followers of Jesus Christ. Remember, there's no color barrier there, only a sin barrier.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.